You know that we love our on-demand listeners here at Lutheran Public Radio. Now, if you've enjoyed listening to Issues Etc. in 2008, please consider making a year-end gift to help support this worldwide outreach. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can contribute by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and mail it to LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. LPR Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of us as we approach the end of 2008. Welcome back to Issues Etc. Here in the second half hour of the program, Dr. Adam Francisco will be our guest. We're going to be talking about the Hajj, Muslims everywhere, at least once in their life. Various times throughout the year, because their calendar moves around a little bit with the moon, will commemorate this great pilgrimage to Mecca and other holy places for the Muslim world. What is this all about? In the millions, they go. Their goal, at least one of them, is to appear there in Mecca, to encircle the Kaaba, this great black temple, rid of all of its pagan idols and now dedicated entirely to Allah. And if you're a good Muslim, you will make every effort to do this at least once in your life. Why are Muslims making the Hajj the great pilgrimage? And what are they doing? Dr. Adam Francisco is our guest. He is guest professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's author of the forthcoming book, Luther and Islam. Dr. Francisco, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I was talking recently with a guest about Islam, and they pointed something out, that a lot of Islam is really just the individual Muslim attempting to reenact on a daily basis the life of Muhammad. Is the Hajj part of that reenactment of Muhammad's life?
Yeah, absolutely. There are numerous places in the Quran where its readers are enjoined to make a Hajj, at least, as you just mentioned, at least once in their life, if they're able to financially and physically. But it's also a sort of reenactment of Abraham's, or the time of Abraham and Hagar and Ishmael. They claim that, for example, when on the first or the second day of the Hajj, they will, after they circle around the Kaaba seven times, then they will go out just beyond Mecca and go back and forth from two hills seven times, which is supposed to be a commemoration of the time when Hagar and Ishmael, according to Islamic tradition, were abandoned by Abraham, and Hagar was pacing to and fro looking for water for Ishmael, because Ishmael apparently was dehydrated. And at one point, she actually, water miraculously appeared, and according to Islamic tradition, it's that the well that sprang forth is still located down there just outside of Mecca, called the Zamzam Well. And Muslims on the Hajj will actually drink water from this well. Now, of course, everything's modern, and so the Saudis have water coolers filled with Zamzam Well and sort of air-conditioned corridors that Muslims can actually go back and forth in, and fully equipped with disabled corridors as well.
So this has become a modern enterprise. It's not completely done in the kind of on-foot manner that
right.
It has been for centuries by Muslims.
Thoroughly modern. I mean, there are airlines dedicated to it. If memory serves me correctly, there's an entire airport, or at least a terminal, dedicated to those people going on Hajj. It used to be there were a couple thousand that would attend each year. For about the last, I don't know, maybe 60 years or so, it's been in the millions.
What is the significance of Mecca as a place for Muslims, past and present?
Well, primarily, it's important to Muslims primarily because this is where Muhammad allegedly first began to, or first began his so-called prophetic mission. The first 12 years of Muhammad's, not the first years, 12 years of his life, but after he supposedly received revelations from Allah, he spent 12 years in Mecca preaching his message, or in warning the people of Mecca from engaging in polytheism, and it didn't work out too well. He was, for the most part, he and the small Muslim community he was able to acquire were persecuted. So eventually, in around 622, Muhammad and the Muslims made the what's called the emigration out of Mecca to Medina. But Mecca is where Islam really began.
When they arrived there, the most common picture that we see in news coverage of the Hajj or the pilgrimage of Islam is this large black cubicle building and Muslims in literally the hundreds of thousands walking around and around. What's going on there?
Well, they're supposed to, on the first day of the Hajj, which is the eighth day of the 12th month, so I guess it's either today, let's see, is today December 6th?
It's the 8th today.
Okay, I believe it. Then it just started a day or two ago. The Muslims they go off the lunar calendar, so they're about 11 days. There's 11 days difference between their calendar and ours. But the first day they're to circle around in counterclockwise around the Kaaba, it's sort of commemorating what they believe Muhammad did, and many Muslims believe this is, in fact, what Abraham did. Some would go so far as to say that Adam and perhaps his wife Eve did it. There's the Muslim tradition says that Abraham and his son Ishmael built the Kaaba, and some will go so far as to say that Adam actually was the first one to build the Kaaba and it was destroyed, and later on Abraham rebuilt it.
And there's associated with this building what's called the Black Stone. And I've never understood its significance, especially in a religion that has been so thoroughly against any kind of imagery or what even could be misinterpreted as idolatry. What is the Black Stone? Where is it, and what is it all about in the life of the Muslim?
In the life of the Muslim, it's the only reason why as they circle around the Kaaba, many of them will try to kiss it. If you can't, you know, now that there are millions of people going on Hajj each year, it's impossible for a lot of people to actually kiss it. But they will sort of shake their hands at it or yell out towards it as they make their way around that corner. As far as the stone, Islamic tradition, you might say folklore, claims that that stone was given to Adam. Others say Abraham to be placed there in the corner of the Kaaba. And originally, they say the stone was white. And over the centuries, as Abraham and his descendants circled around the Kaaba and kissed it, it absorbed the sins of the people. And now it's, of course, black because it's absorbed all the sins. But it is interesting that they venerate this stone. But it's just they would explain it by simply saying this is what Muhammad or the Quran and therefore Allah enjoins us to do.
Is there a transactional nature in the mind of the devout Muslim about this pilgrimage, about the Hajj? That is there some kind of a transaction regarding their sin taking place here, an atonement or some kind of appeasement for sin?
Not really. They understand sin very differently than we do, and there are certain rituals like the Hajj and also fasting during Ramadan where they say if you do that, Allah is more ready to forgive some of your sins. And in fact, if you follow the five pillars of Islam to the T, you stand a better chance of being forgiven by Allah. But there is no sacrifice, even though on I think either the third or fourth day of the Hajj, Muslims will either sacrifice an animal themselves or they'll have somebody do it for them. Sometimes people or some interpreters suggest that they're imitating Jewish and Christian tradition, but they are not at all. It's just simply sacrificing an animal to commemorate the sacrifice that Abraham gave after he was told us to cease from sacrificing his son, and then God provided a ram in the thicket. And so it's just a commemoration. There is no concept of substitutionary atonement or sacrifice for sins. In fact, the Quran says quite clearly that one cannot die for the sins of another.
So I think it's called the Eid or something along those lines, this animal sacrifice. is merely symbolic and a reenactment of Abraham's activity.
Exactly. And of course, they completely reinterpret Abraham's life, and they replace Isaac with Ishmael. And they have their own traditions that sort of parallel the Judeo-Christian scriptures, but are very different. And the terminology, while it may be the same, is assigned different, has different meaning.
So how did they tell the story of Abraham, Isaac, and Ishmael differently from that of the Christian scriptures?
Yeah, well, the Quran isn't exactly clear on this. Islamic tradition actually supplies the data, but essentially what happened to Isaac in the Old Testament happens to Ishmael according to Islamic tradition. Sarah and Isaac are imposters, really, and seen as imposters, where Hagar and Ishmael are seen as the rightful heirs of Abraham. And, the Arabs historically, and some of the earliest sources say the Arabs trace their heritage back to Ishmael. And in fact, John of Damascus referred to Islam as the heresy of the Ishmaelites. And most historians think that the Arabs just simply have always traced their lineage back there.
When we come back from this break, we'll talk more about the pilgrimage of Islam. Began on the 6th of the 7th, depending on how you want to count the days of this month, and goes for another couple days. It's Monday, December the 8th. Dr. Adam Francisco is our guest. 10 more minutes with him on the other side of the break, 1-877-623-6943, or talk back at issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us for a few minutes at the beginning. She has an interesting reaction to Newsweek magazine's cover story on gay marriage, and we'll find out what she has to say about it. Then we'll spend the remainder of the program with Dr. Andrew Doss, beginning a three-part daily series on baptism today, baptism and salvation. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dr. Adam Francisco, guest professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and author of the forthcoming book, Luther and Islam. I'm Todd Wilkins. Stay tuned.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Bethany Perry, David Fueling, Clarissa Pacey, Karen Fueling, Pastor James Rice, Paul Diekhoff, Barbara Lyles, Pastor Rob Reinert III, Leslie Buesen, and Ethel Hine. Thanks for your support.
Celebrate with gifts that illuminate the message of the holiday season from Concordia Publishing House. Click cph.org to shop a wide selection of books, home decor, and seasonal gifts, and find the perfect present for everyone on your list. And throughout December, purchase a children's Christmas book online or in our bookstore, and Concordia will donate a Christmas book to a local children's charity. Gifts with a message and a meaning. From Concordia Publishing House. Believe in the wonder.
Never trust a smiling evangelical. You're listening to Issues Etc.
International human rights attorney and law professor Dr. John Warwick Montgomery on the importance of Issues Etc.
Before settling in England and France, I had my own Christian radio program for 10 years in California and 2 years in Washington State. I was also a regular for over a decade on national religious television. In a word, I have had a great deal of contact with evangelical programming, both good and bad, and my judgment in this area is probably worth something. In my opinion, Issues Etc. is one of the very few programs on Christian radio willing to discuss tough questions with solid theological answers. I consider it a great privilege to be able to appear on the program regularly, and I commend it to every serious listener.
You can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making an online gift today, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Thanks for your support.
Well, Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're talking about the Islamic pilgrimage, the Hajj. Dr. Adam Francisco is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Are you tired of Bible studies? You hardly could even call them Bible studies, could you? That contain so little Bible or no Bible whatsoever. Sometimes it's just a book written by a Christian author that may deal more with you, your experience, and what's going on in your life than anything the Bible has to say. Certainly not Christ-centered or cross-focused. If you're tired of Bible studies that contain little to no Bible, a great resource from Concordia Publishing House called A Longer Look at the Lessons. It's an in-depth look at the appointed readings for the church year, and it's an in-depth look at the Bible. A Longer Look at the Lessons, you can find out more about it by going to our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or you can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Their toll-free number, 1-800-325-3040. It's very affordable, only $30 a quarter for A Longer Look at the Lessons, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Francisco, there are a couple other, I guess, traditions associated with the Islamic pilgrimage. One of them is the stoning of the devil. What does it look like, and what does the Muslim believe he's doing?
There are three pillars set outside of Mecca, just massive pillars, and they're said to be sort of symbolic of the three temptations of Abraham to cease from temptations that Satan gave Abraham from sacrificing his son Ishmael. And so when they throw stones at these pillars, it's supposed to be symbolic of throwing stones at Shaitan. And really what the Muslim is doing there is renouncing the devil and his temptations for the individual Muslim believer. But it's, it harkens back to Abraham's temptation by Satan.
Another one is, and this is optional, but I imagine it would be rather popular if you're going to make the trip all the way to Mecca to visit also Medina and the Mosque of the Prophet, and perhaps even what is believed to be the tomb of Muhammad himself.
Yes, that's not required, but many people, if you're going to go there, they might as well go up there and visit the tomb. There is a tradition, a more mystical tradition in Islam that sort of assigns, magical power to saints or to graves and tombstones of saints of the past, and of course Muhammad being the greatest in the Islamic worldview. Many people, if they're ill or something, they would go there to see if perhaps they'd be healed by getting close to Muhammad's tomb. There's also said to be a lock of Muhammad's hair that you can actually see in some sort of case there. Of course, it's really difficult for a non-Muslim to report about the Hajj based on empirical observation, because no non-Muslim is permitted anywhere near Mecca or Medina, although there have been some Westerners who have sort of snuck in on the Hajj. There was an old Lutheran, early 17th, late 16th century Lutheran, who was caught by the Turks and was actually a slave of one of the Turkish governor, and he grew a beard and sort of took on Islamic customs but never converted himself, and he actually went on the Hajj with his master, and when he got back to Istanbul, finally fled his master back to Germany and wrote what I think is probably the first book written in a European language on the Hajj itself.
And has the Hajj been practiced in Islam from its inception, from the death of Muhammad, or is it something that grew up later?
Well, that's a tough question. They would, of course, a Muslim would say it's been practiced since the time of Muhammad, and actually I should say towards the end of Muhammad's life, because Muhammad was forbidden from entering Mecca after he left Mecca in around 622, but eventually will return in 630 when he will conquer Mecca from the Meccans. But Muslims will even say that, of course, the Hajj has been going on since the time of Abraham or Adam. Now, if you look at this as a historian, though, you find very little evidence that any of this is going on. In fact, you're probably familiar with that Wall Street Journal article that appeared about 2 weeks ago, where a Muslim scholar in Germany is even beginning to question the historicity of Muhammad. So it's as a historian, it's tough to really say with any degree of certainty. But Muslim tradition, of course, says it has been going on for centuries.
Well, you know, it's one thing to see in an age where Islam is a bona fide world religion, where there's a fair amount of wealth associated with it, especially in the oil countries, where, as you said, an entire terminal in an airport can be devoted to pilgrims in their travels on the Hajj, and we're talking about in 2007, 3 million estimated Muslims made this pilgrimage. To somehow extrapolate back that Muslims have always been doing this in these kind of numbers, I can't imagine that before modern transportation, they were getting millions to go on the Hajj.
Certainly not. But, this is judgmental, and I won't apologize for it, but Muslims are masters at inventing historical narratives. And they oftentimes prefer ideology over fact. And the sad thing is they get away with it because nobody's holding them accountable to facts. But that's the way it is.
So in the life of the individual Muslim, what is the role? I mean, does he hope to go on the pilgrimage, and what does he hope to gain from it?
Yes, he is – every Muslim, every able-bodied and financially stable Muslim – is essentially commanded by Allah in the Quran to make the Hajj. They have to. If there are, of course, some exceptions. If you're physically unable or disabled, or you just don't have the money, you don't have to go. There are other exceptions that have sort of emerged recently that say you can actually have somebody go on the Hajj in your place if you just don't want to go. That doesn't sit well with conservative Islam, but. There's most Muslims would say that in going on the Hajj, they experience a few things. One is they experience a tremendous sense of unity in the Muslim world. A great way to see this, or a great place to see this, is that movie, I think it's Spike Lee directed it, Malcolm X, where he goes on the Hajj. And it's a pretty good depiction of what goes on in the variety of people that go on the Hajj. You find anyone from an African American to your average European Caucasian going there, and they eventually shave their heads and they all dress the same, and that's designed to provide a sense of a global Muslim unity. But I once asked a Muslim after he got back on Hajj, you know, what the point was. I asked a little nicer than that, but and he said he felt he was drawn much closer to Allah. Actually, on most days of the Hajj, one in particular, the night of the third day, one is to spend all night in contemplation and sort of going over their life to see, you know, where they went wrong and how they can do better next time and how they can continue to draw closer to Allah.
Dr. Adam Francisco is guest professor of historical theology at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Author of the forthcoming book, Luther and Islam. Dr. Francisco, thanks for your time this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
Folks, if you appreciate interviews on world religions like we have here on Issues, etc., on a regular basis, please consider making a year-end gift to help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, etc. You can donate online, issuesetc.org. That's our website, issuesetc.org. Or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and mail it to LPR, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's LPR, Box 1046, SJC, California, zip code 92693. Thanks for your support, especially as we get to the end of this year. When we come back from the break, hour two of Issues, Etc., Molly Ziegler-Hemingway will join us from GetReligion.org. She has a few issues regarding a Newsweek magazine cover story on gay marriage and how Christians find it objectionable. Dr. Andrew Doss will be our guest. We'll begin a three-part daily series with him on baptism today, Baptism and Salvation. He's professor of religious studies at Elmhurst College in Elmhurst, Illinois, author of the book Baptized into God's family. 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E, or email us in the next hour of the program, talkback@issuesetc.org. Well, in a religion that is the essence of works righteousness, Allah is there in his paradise arbitrarily judging between men. You're going to be as obedient as you possibly can. You want to hedge your bets. You want to make sure that you've got everything going for you. And if it takes making that pilgrimage to Mecca, going through these rituals that may or may not have any basis in history whatsoever, you're going to do it. If your religion is all about trying to hedge your bets with an arbitrary God, obedience is the key. You'll do everything you can. It's a very sad state of affairs. Christ's obedience suffices for all men. This is what the Muslim needs to know. It would replace the Hajj very nicely. When we come back, hour two.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.